Patreon bonus episode. Today we're speaking to Joshua Farrell Malloy. He's a researcher focusing on extremism, terrorism, and foreign fighters. Today he's going to be talking to us about the contemporary use of letter bombs in Europe and North America. We're talking about letter bombs, mail bombs, whatever people want to call it. I think when people think back to letter bombs, they think of like a time in like the 70s or the 80s, very like PFLP, Carlos the Jackal type stuff. But actually, mail bombs, letter bombs, they're ongoing, right? And they have been for a while. Tell us about it. How prevalent are these things still?
You're right. Like the 1970s to the 80s to the 90s, that was sort of like the peak of mail bombs. And the majority of them came from three main groups, Palestinian militant organizations, Basque separatists, and Irish Republicans. But yeah, from throughout the 2000s, the use has kind of declined. And these three groups that I just mentioned are like very, they obviously had access to a lot of resources, had a lot of experienced bomb makers. And this is also a period when there wasn't as much security infrastructure around. So it was probably quite easier to carry out this tactic. But in the last two decades, that hasn't been the case. It's kind of shifted a bit. And it's not really something that we see happening that often. Like the last high profile attack that really happened was at the end of 2022 in Spain. And there was a series of six mail bombs were sent to different targets. The first arrived November 24th, the Spanish Prime Minister's residence or office, and that was intercepted. And then November 30th, there was an explosion at the Ukrainian embassy in Madrid, which injured an employee. And a few hours later, another one showed up at an arms manufacturing company, which was producing weapons, which were being sent to Ukraine. And then the next day, the last three were sent to the US embassy in Madrid, Ministry of Defense, and a European Union Center for Satellites. And yeah, it was quite an interesting attack. The New York Times published a story shortly afterwards, pointing to the Russian imperial movement. US officials said that they believed that the Russian imperial movement and Russian military intelligence were perhaps working together, and they were behind this attack, which is quite a specific statement to make. But within a couple of days, the Spanish authorities...
That's the RIM. They're a far-right group, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they took that threat so seriously that they updated their terror watch list to include members of the Russian imperial movement.
But it wasn't them, right?
No. Within a couple of days, the Spanish authorities announced that they had arrested a 74-year-old man, Pompeo Gonzalez Pascual. And they found him because of the stamps that he was using. They were able to narrow down the location he was in. They got data from Amazon, and they were able to find that he had purchased like a kilo of potassium nitrate and light bulbs and wiring. Another material was used for mail bombs, and stenciling equipment is also something that's typically used during.
What would that be useful for, stenciling equipment?
Putting the address on the package, because they can, if you send a bomb and it doesn't detonate, then your handwriting's all over it.
Ah, I see, that kind of stenciling, right? And what about light bulbs?
I think it's the I can't remember the name of it, but there's a filament in the bulb which is used as a detonator in very crudely made explosives.
It's probably best we don't go into too much of it. I don't want to get like marked for telling people how to build a bomb, but yeah, that is fascinating.
Yeah, and yeah, so that's they were able to get this data from Amazon, and they carried out surveillance on his house and did the usual thing. They waited him to throw out his trash, took his DNA from that, and arrested him. And he's obviously a 74-year-old guy. He had no connection to any state or any terrorist organization, but they did find a lot of Soviet Union paraphernalia and propaganda in his house. Like there was a bust of Lenin, some posters of Castro, that kind of thing.
So he was like a militant tanky, essentially.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, they noticed that he was watching a lot of there's a YouTube channel that's very pro-Venezuelan and very pro-Putin and spreads a lot of disinformation about the war in Ukraine. And he'd been watching a lot of that as well. So yeah, very much like a complete opposite of far right. But yeah, that's who was responsible. So, I mean, that was the last really high profile attack in Europe. So very much someone who's an unusual character and an unusual method of attack, really.
Absolutely. From what I was reading here from your piece, I've understood that whilst letter bombs have continued, they're kind of different now, right? They're less to cause destruction and more to kind of scare people, right? Like they're not the same thing anymore.
Yeah, no, they're, and I think this is partly like for a number of reasons, like increased security makes it difficult to send something like more sophisticated, like a pipe bomb. And also, yes, maybe the skills just aren't really there and the resources aren't really there to make anything more deadlier. They've been described as sort of like fireworks in envelopes or packages containing low-grade explosives, things like this. So of all of the weapons that terrorist organizations use for their attacks, letter bombs are the ones that have like the highest failure rate. They tend to like, I think something like less than half actually even detonate. And when they do, it could just be smoke or a flame, something like that. And generally the injuries that people receive are to the hands or to their face, but they're not too severe.
So it's more a form of, I don't want to say protest, it's obviously a lot more than simple protest, but it's more a form of, I guess you could say, like, that is one time I think when you can use the definition of terror, because it's just trying to scare the shit out of people, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's about literally like sending a message, and I think it's also, I would put it on the same level in some, well, I'd say I'd put it just one step above, you know, throwing a Molotov cocktail at an embassy in the middle of the night or something. And I know these Greek insurrectionary anarchist groups, they can use IEDs in the middle of the night. Sometimes they turn up at a location, leave a bomb, you know, on a wall or something, and then they run away and detonate it in the middle of the night. I'd say a letter bomb is in between a petrol bomb attack and one of those kind of attacks.
I think the thing about it is, though, that it's so personal. Do you know what I mean? Like, if someone, like, threw a rock at me, I'd be like, yeah, fuck off. Like, but if someone sent some shit to my house, even if it didn't explode, I'd be like, right, you know, this is serious now.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, it's, the psychological impact is probably quite severe. And, I mean, it's also, it will shut down an entire building. I mean, the whole thing would be evacuated. You know, you could send a letter with a very small amount of explosives. It doesn't even have to have a, you know, a detonation mechanism or anything like that. And you'll shut down the whole building. You'll make headlines. You know, it gets you a lot of attention. So there's quite a high payoff for such a small action.
Right. And you were talking there about the Greek ones. I know Conspiracy of Cells Fire, the kind of anarcho-nihilist militant group, one of the most effective in Greece in modern times. I mean, effective for want of a better word, but you know what I mean? They were about it. They were organized. They did stuff. They utilized letter bombs as well, right? Quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah. No, they've had, there's quite a few incidents related to that whole ideology. But yeah, Greece and Italy has been the source of most of them. But yeah, the Conspiracy of Cells of Fire, they carried out one attack in 2010. They sent 14 parcel bombs at once to embassies all over Athens. They've also targeted Angela Merkel and Silvio Berlusconi. They only injured one courier in these attacks. It caused massive, massive disruption, and it actually shut down the Greek authorities actually shut down all airmail for 48 hours. So, you know, a significant amount of disruption. And yeah, I mean, these things, like I said, they're very small, very quite easy to make. And it carries a lower risk to the people that are actually doing it. I mean, you can still get caught, you know, maybe cameras at the post office or this kind of thing. But yeah, it allows you to hit targets that you wouldn't have the capacity to reach. You know, these embassies are surrounded by rings of security and cameras and so on. So it's also a way of achieving that as well.
Mm. And how likely are people to get caught from this stuff now? Obviously, technology is a lot more improved since the 80s and the 70s. I imagine fingerprints, DNA, stuff like that is quite a big issue.
Yeah, I mean, similar to this case in Spain where they were able to, you know, find out where he was with the stamp and then go onto Amazon and get this data. They, I'm sure there's a list of materials that people generally order on Amazon that sends a red flag, you know, for equipment that can be used for bombs. But in these cases, they can get a warrant and they can find out who's been ordering certain chemicals. And they did this in Austin as well. There was a serial bomber in Austin, I think in 2018. I don't think he had he had no ideology. There's still not known why he did it, but he killed several people with these package bombs. And again, that was one of the ways they were able to kind of narrow things down, was to find out who had made what purchases. So just this kind of trace.
Was that the older fella?
I think he was a relatively younger. I think he blew himself up rather than being captured. It was a weird case.
Yes, I remember this. Yeah, he was young. And at first I wondered if it was a racist thing, but it wasn't. It just happened to be in like, I don't know, I think it was in a black neighborhood and someone like picked it up or whatever that was black got injured. But it turned out to be, I mean, they didn't really pin down the ideology, but I read through a lot of the, he left like a kind of semi-manifesto with like, in like various posts. And it was kind of this like post-ideological mayhem. Do you know what I mean? He didn't really have any goal other than to wreak chaos because of he felt chaos in his life, if that makes sense. Very odd.
Yeah. And I think it's also it's something that typically surfaces as well with people with kind of very single issue cases, or people that, you know, might be having psychological problems. There's one case I came across, which I'd never heard of before. It was the Midwest pipe bomber. And he was planning to create a smiley face on the national map of the United States. Just driving around and planting these bombs inside people's mailboxes, and with that sole intention, just to kind of so that each, if you were to put a pin or a marker on the map of where each blast was had occurred, it would draw a giant smiley face. And I mean, he was eventually diagnosed with schizophrenia and had all sorts of crazy beliefs.
I never heard of that either. It's very like it's similar to Project Mayhem, you know, from Fight Club, the second half of the film, when they kind of form that like insurrectionist cell and they blow out all the windows on the building with a smiley face.
Mm. But yeah, I mean, the other anarchist group that did this is the FAI, the Informal Anarchist Federation. And one of their biggest attacks was in 2003, Operation Santa Claus. They sent 7 devices to Italy, Netherlands, Belgium, Germany, and the UK, targeted like Europol, Eurojust, and, you know, a lot of government institutions and buildings. These packages, again, they caused no injuries and they just caught fire once they opened. And they did another attack in like 2010, which was quite similar, also sent around Christmas time, like around, you know, this period between in December, when a lot of mail sorting offices and, you know, there's a lot of post everywhere, so it's a lot more difficult, I suspect, to try and identify suspect packages. And that's obviously the name Santa Claus comes from that. But these two groups, throughout really around the 2010s, was kind of like the peak of these attacks, around the height of austerity and the financial crisis. But I think the last one was 2017, and that was the SPF. They sent 10 mail bombs. One of them reached the IMF, and another device reached the German Minister of Finance, but it was defused. And then the last 8 packages were intercepted at a Hellenic post sorting office. And this typically is something that happens, I think, when one bomb goes off, or there's like a one-on-one device gets detected as it arrives at a building. Security alert suddenly heightens and everyone's on the lookout for like certain packages or addressed to certain places. So the likelihood of one being intercepted after they discover one is quite high as well. So that's another factor that happens at these large scale attacks.
Who's the SPF, sorry?
Oh, sorry, the SPF, that's just them. And for the conspiracy of Cells of Fire, whatever way you say it in Greek, the initials are SPF.
Ah, it's SPFC, I see. Yeah, in English it would be CCF usually. I'm surprised the FAI didn't actually utilize proper mail bombs, because they were really hardcore. I remember I wrote a piece on them in like, I want to say 2012, 2013. And they were really hardcore. They were kneecapping, I think it was a oil executive, like literally caught him outside his mansion, shot him in both his knees. They were doing some really serious stuff. Do you think the fact that like groups like that are not using like strong mail bombs is more to do with lack of skills or tactics?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to tell because, you know, with some people who send them like the MAGA bomber, for example, I mean, he sent like 16 devices. Some of them didn't even have fuses in them. They weren't even viable. But in the case of these groups, particularly with FAI, they do appear to be viable. And then they have things like shrapnel in them, which is obviously, you know, shows clear intent to want to injure people at the very slight least. But I think due to the size of them, it's just about the amount of explosives. I think it's probably could be a mixture of just not having the skills, but also wanting to send a message, but not kind of wanting to go too far. I think there was one that targeted someone specifically, or a couple that were targeted people specifically, like the German Minister of Finance, and there was another one that targeted a former Greek Prime Minister. You know, I think maybe they would have particularly liked to hurt those people specifically, but in terms of like the organizations that they send them to, I'm not sure. It's hard to tell what's a lack of resources and what's a lack of will.
Right. And I mean, it might be worth reminding people like how serious letter bombs were. Like they did some serious damage in the 70s and the 80s, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, like even you look at the fatalities or people like Kaczynski, for example, you know, these things killed.
I forgot about Kaczynski saying that. Yeah, he was like the main guy for it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, he's an outlier, really. I mean, even just in terms of like how long he was gone for and how many he killed and injured, you know, that's very unusual. I mean, they were quite powerful. I think he was building them from like junk from around him, which is also another reason why it's so hard to find them. It's when it comes to the components they use, this is usually how they kind of trace it back to people.
Also, I think as well, when it's being passed through the, you know, like the letter sorting place, so many different hands touch it, so much cross-contamination of DNA. And then if it does like burn out when it's open, just everything's out in the air.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I think other than Kaczynski, I was actually just thinking there was another case in England. There was another lone attacker, Miles Cooper. And he sent like 7 devices to places he believed were involved in surveillance and British government surveillance. And like, this is a guy who I presume had no experience. I think he was like a caretaker in a primary school. And most of his devices exploded and injured people. So, I mean, if someone like this can do it, you know, then these other organizations somehow fail. I suspect it could also be something to do with how many they're sending and the high rate of interception that usually happens in these places, because these aren't just normal people opening their mail. It's, you know, these are buildings which have procedures in place for sorting through mail as well. So I think that's another factor.
Yeah. Do you think we'll ever see like a proper resurgence of letter bombing, or do you think it's kind of on its way out?
I suspect it's on its way out because of security measures that are in place. I think that's, you know, I mean, I think even like the Austin bomber, he was hand delivering packages as well on people's porches. So it wasn't even going through like the postal system at that stage. But, you know, I think you'll still see incidents happening from individuals. But as for groups, it doesn't really seem to be something that's quite common. I mean, the dissident Republicans used them from Northern Ireland in 2014, targeting army recruitment centres across the UK. And then in 2019, they sent another like 5 packages to different transport hubs and another recruitment centre at the University of Glasgow, and caused all this chaos and shut down these places and everything. But that was, for them, that was quite a significant attack, because it allowed them to target the UK for the first time in over a decade, or about a decade. And they probably couldn't
have. I remember that. They actually went off, didn't they?
Yeah, they started small fires. And the exact same devices that they used in 2014, they used again in 2019. But yeah, I mean, it would have in terms of their legitimacy, maybe the morale of the organization, you know, targeting the UK, was quite a big thing. But yet they haven't really done it since. So I don't know. I mean, even when you look at groups like that, that are committed, that don't have the resources, that don't have the capacity to carry out like large scale attacks that they would like to, even when they're not using them, there must be a reason. I'm assuming maybe there's a high arrest rate or something, you know, or a lot of devices maybe just get intercepted, too many of them.
Yeah, and x-rays as well. I think that's a big issue. All right, mate. Well, thank you very much. If people want to follow you and ask you about mail bombs and the other interesting stuff that you cover, where can they do it?
Yeah, they can follow me on Twitter if they want. I'm at JoshMalloy101. And yeah, you can just follow me there. I usually, anything I post a lot on, I publish stuff on extremism or terrorism or whatever, I always share it on Twitter. So I put my work there.
Excellent. And if people want to read the article that you wrote for us, it's second issue of Popular Front magazine. So you can get that from the popularfront.shop. All right, mate. Thanks very much.
No worries there.